Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, your station, your community.
I'm pleased to say we're joined by some special guests, Tim Wander and Ash Webb, who are trustees for the Bembridge Fort Charitable Trust. Is that right? So you guys are getting
That's perfect, Martin. Thank you.
You guys are getting it together. So people who don't know, the Bembridge Fort is the building you'll drive past if you go up the St Culver, kind of about two-thirds of the way up, isn't it? That looks the mysterious, giant, hidden amongst the sort of this kind of brick, red brick work.
Giant molehill on the hill.
Yeah, just sort of hidden. So, yeah, and you guys are kind of, well, renovating it or turning it back in. Do you want to explain what you've been up to?
That's right. Bembridge Fort is an amazing building that nobody in the Isle of Wight's ever been to, because it's essentially been closed since the military left it in 1957. And you really are now looking at a unique survivor from several ages gone. Its history as a Palmerston fort, one of 22 around the island, is exceptional, because it never fired a shot in anger because the French never came. But by time of World War II, you are looking at the most secret place on the south of England, the whole country.
Wow,
the army, the navy, the air force there, advances in radar. And that's the story we want to tell.
Yeah, okay. Do you want to start at the beginning, how you guys have taken it over now? So it's currently owned by National Trust, isn't it? But you guys have taken over a lease. And
we've got a long-term lease on it at the moment. So, yeah, Tim was a tour guide for a number of years, and he wrote me on it 3 years ago. So, I learnt the ropes off Tim. Always had an interest in history and love anything about the Isle of Wight. So, I say since we've taken it over, we've shifted 55 tonnes of old scrap iron work, haven't we? So
yeah, you're all volunteers as well. And this is, yes, you're just saying off it. It's only been 6 months since you've had this lease, isn't it? It sounds like you've been working on it behind the scenes for quite a long time.
6 months or 10 years. So I mean,
that's got to say it.
The fort has been waiting, and as you say, yes. So the fort was taken over by the National Trust in 1967. In truth, they essentially just wanted the headland, the land, and the fort came to them almost as an exception. It was then taken over and leased to an engineering company, Micron Engineering, as was then, a world-class spraying company, who then set about converting the fort as offices, and they are still there. So effectively, the National Trust never quite knew what to do with it. Of course, their flagship has always been the Needles Battery, where we're now going to be the only second Palmerston fort you can ever visit on the Isle of Wight, because all the others of the 22 are now converted to apartments like Golden Hill or Fort Redoubt in Freshwater, or have been lost under caravan or campsites. Yeah. So Bembridge Fort has this incredible history, and I think it's beholding on us, but we just don't want to make it a museum or a history site. The whole plan that we have for this great team of volunteers, and you know, a whole team of different professionals are giving a huge amount of time. It's taken us 2.5 to 3 years to negotiate with the National Trust, but now they've now, I say, given us a very long time lease, and they've now made the work we've done with them part of their future historic management plans. So we've sort of broken the mould, because you know, a team of enthusiasts to bring this fort back into community use, to tell its stories, to tell its history, to interpret it. But also, I mean, it's a huge fort, it's an amazing space, and we now have the Underground Theatre ready to go on Sunday.
Well, yeah, because we've got some events that we'll come to in a minute. I mean, I'm intrigued as well. What does the building comprise of? So, when you drive past it, it looks, you know, you think, you know, World War II, maybe it's probably built for that, but speaking before, this goes right back. It was actually originally built in the 1800s, wasn't it?
Yes, it was built in 1862 and finished in 1867. So we had a massive fear of the French at that time. And Napoleon III, who was the nephew of Napoleon Bonaparte. So the British got a little bit scared about a vessel that he actually made. His navy made, which was called La Gloire or La Glory. It was a vessel that was iron plated down to the waterline. And all of a sudden, we had this massive fear that this ship could come into English waters and blow some of our vessels.
Sandown Bay, or even the Solent.
Yeah. So there was this massive building programme, the first time since Tudor times, that Palmerston, who was the Prime Minister at the time, with Gladstone, who was his Chancellor, and they decided to build nearly 76 forts right across the country at a very high cost. Gladstone was fearful it was going to put the country into bankruptcy. But Palmerston got his own way. He was the Prime Minister. And like I say, Bembridge Fort was one of these forts that was built on the island. It's an elongated hexagonal fort. and it's called a fallback fort. So all the other coastal batteries around Yavelin Fort, Redcliffe Battery, Sandown Barrack Battery, all these forts, so if the island got taken, they would fall back into Bembridge Fort and defend the island on the eastern side of the Isle of Wight. So Golden Hill Fort was on the west, and like I say, Bembridge Fort was on the east. So
what's then behind? Because like I say, when you drive past it, you sort of see this, like it's called it, describe it itself as a mound. You see the brick, but we don't, you know, what's behind it? You've already touched on, you've got some venues, but, you know, what does it comprise of? What's behind those kind of weird kind of brick buildings, brick gates? Or
well, I think the first thing to, and again, at the moment it's private and with the engineering works, but the part where we're going to open it up, the first thing that if you do peer is the bridge. You had a bridge. It used to be a drawbridge, like an old-time Western fort. The bridge used to go up. That actually collapsed in 1940 because the new radar equipment was so heavy, it couldn't take it. You then got a very deep dry ditch, never a moat, but a dry ditch, 28 feet deep and 30 feet wide, and that was dug by hand in the 1860s. No JCBs or other equipment is available, but teams of navvies. But they weren't just building Bembridge Fort. They were building Yavelin Battery. They were building Redcliffe Fort. They were building the Granite Fort, which is now the Wild Heart Trust or the zoo as was. All these were being built. So you're talking a headland covered in tents, thousands of men digging by hand. The navvies, as they were called, father, son, and sometimes grandfather, shifted. In fact, the Yarborough Monument, a lot of islanders will recognise, was actually where Bembridge Fort now. It had to be moved down the headland. And then they started digging. Big ditch, big ramparts there. Three of the sides have got tunnels, gunpowder magazines, officers. I showed some people around actually on Thursday who'd read all about it, and they literally could not believe how big it is. And now, as the Trust, we've been able to open up 90% of the fort, and it is, I mean, we're running some big tours on Saturday, which are sadly all sold out. It's 3 hours to get round it, walk around the ditch. It is a massive, massive fortification, designed to protect against the French, but of course the French never came.
Oh, that's the whole irony of a lot of these things. Yeah. But it's a massive amount of island history then, you know. People don't seem to realize. I mean, I didn't know too much about the what was going on necessarily at that time. And like you say, it's real key.
I think for ourselves, and it's the history, and part of, you know, what Ash is doing, we're trying to interpret it. We've got a lot of people now contacting whose fathers and even grandfathers served there. Because during the First World War, it was a massive training centre with stables. And in fact, I mean, tragically, the Isle of Wight Rifles were all based there before they went off to Gallipoli. We know the Hampshire Regiment were there before they went to the Somme. Now, a lot of young men, you know, trained and served there and never came back to these shores. So that's something we want to make sure we commemorate and interpret and celebrate, if that's the right word. But really, for myself and Ash, a lot of ourself, and I think you're in the same view. So it's World War II history is exceptional. And indeed, that probably chimes more with the current population as we come into a year with Victory in Europe Day, the end of the Second World War.
Anniversary.
Bembridge Fort in the Second World War changed the course of the war. It will change Hitler's attempts to invade this country. It will change the whole policy of the Battle of Britain because of the unique work that was done on radar. And that's a story you'll need to read in the new book that Ash and I are putting together. Yeah. But also, by 1940, there's over 400 people serving there. It is the most secret and secure place, I say, in probably all of England. And one of the few places you have the Army, the Navy and the Air Force and the Home Guard and the Royal Artillery. I think we think 13 different sections in the same building. And so we develop radar there. We develop the new indicator loop systems to detect submarines. We have anti-aircraft guns, searchlights. We have super secret comms. We are a listening station for Bletchley Park, working with the radar station, which is up the head, just by the Culver Haven, as it is now. And the stories that are coming out there, we're researching every day, are really quite exceptional.
Everyone loves a bit of secrecy, especially around the war, because we know so much went on in terms of, you know, spies and just stuff like that. So it's you know, that whole mystery just, you know, makes it intriguing, and people want to know more.
Well, Ash will tell you all about our spy. We have our own spy.
Okay.
Oh, well, one of the spies, I think it's been written about, the Dorothy O'Grady story. Dorothy O'Grady, I think it's a story that was written by Adrian Searle, one of his books. So she was a local lady in Sandown. She came to live on the Isle of Wight just before World War II started, and her husband Vincent was a firefighter. He retired, but he decided to go back to London to help fight the cause. So there was this big mystery. It's mainly around Sandown, but it kind of involves a bit of Benbridge as well, because it was in the immediate area where Dorothy, she was found cutting telephone wires and going on to around Yavelin Beach, out of bound areas where she wasn't meant to go.
Drawing pictures of the radar station, the big huge dish rotating.
So it's an interesting story. Again, it's been written about, but it all sort of plays into the secrecy and spies of the time, and the fear, the pure fear that the Germans were across the Channel and that they might invade. But
I think in 1940, you have to remember that it was a case of not if the invasion came, it's when. Yeah. So Sandown Bay becomes. It's the easiest place to invade. It's 5 miles wide. It's incredibly shallow. You land tanks there. You can be in Cowes in an hour. So, that's why you have these five Palmerston forts there, but are reactivated in World War II. That's why they put this massive Z1 scaffolding right across, 32 miles, all with minefields, barbed wire. You've got then indicator loops right across Sandown Bay, Whitecliffe Bay, out to the Nab Tower. You've got a whole system of minefields, which were fired from Benbridge Fort. I interviewed one of the ladies, and they were literally listening for clicks on the headphone. If they got three clicks as the submarine crossed the wire, they pressed the button, 16 mines would blow up. So we are incredible. Now, that whole technology has been lost. Yeah. So we're going to tell this story. And in fact, just last week, Ash and I were working up there, two gentlemen walked in. It was their father and grandfather, and he was a loop operator there. He ran the systems there. It was great. So we've now got, first-hand evidence, and we've been finding more and more cables, and that's nobody knows about that system. It's completely new. But if you add in the radar system, the first chain home low, first chain home extra low, all very technical stuff, but we'll tell those stories, big rotating dishes. And the radar was there until 1957 when the fort was stood down. So again, you look at all this information and all the comms. We have a deep comms room buried deep inside, so we could talk to anywhere on the Isle of Wight, any gun battery, searchlight, machine gun place, all the lead cables still are found all over the place. We had direct links to Whitehall, Downing Street, Bomber Command, Fighter Command. So the Benbridge Fort is really the hub of the defence of the Isle of Wight. That's why we love it so much.
Yeah, I'm hooked, guys. I'm hooked. But in terms of what you guys are doing then, so I could listen to your stories for hours here. In terms of the short term at the moment then, what you're turning it into, because you mentioned you've got this, you're making a venue, a kind of quite a unique space that I think you've kind of created that you've got.
So the fort has been neglected for 60 years. The National Trust put into what's called managed decline, which is it's just ticking over. We've put the group together to bring it back into widespread community use. So it's to open it up, to allow people to visit, understand all the stories that we've been telling you and many more. And I think the other story is that it's such a great space, is to say what else we can do. Now, the Isle of Wight is crying out for more events. Yeah. And you look at the maps, we've lost 40 places in the last 30 years. So we think we can, with a lot of time, a lot of effort, sweat, no doubt a few tears, we can turn this around. So we've just finished the underground theatre. It's called the Magazine Theatre. We work with Paul and the Time and Tide Players, who are a brilliant group of young, enthusiastic, artistic theatre types, which is not me and it's not Ash. however, we can turn the building around. Their first show is on Sunday night. It's called
Arwold, Tribute to the Last King of the Isle of Wight.
And there's two nights, there's Tuesday night as well. Booking online, benbridgefort.org. Now, all the proceeds from anything we do go towards restoring the fort. But with the players, we've been helping them to bring it on because we want to bring it back into use. And then, we got the first tours this weekend, or so, sold out. And then we've got the first paranormal ghost hunting group in on Saturday night ever.
That's a place for it. That's
they sold it. I mean, they're nice. I mean, Ash is probably listening, but they're a cheap date because they don't want the lights on, they don't want the heating on. So they're great.
It. Make it more spooky as possible. Yes.
Good. And again, whether that's your cup of tea, we just, and we're getting emails every day. We'd like to put in, silent discos or loud discos. And we're in the middle of nowhere, unlimited parking and bits and pieces. So the sky's the limit. And at the moment, we're almost holding them off. We've got three car clubs coming for shows, probably going to do the barbecues up there. But the big one is May the 10th this year.
Yeah, you've got a big event coming up, haven't you?
May the 10th.
Plug May the 10th. This is your big open day, isn't it?
Go.
So May the 10th, VE Day. Obviously, it's 80 years since VE Day. We're going to have classic cars. We're going to have hog roast, aren't we, up there?
Absolutely.
Teas and coffees. People dressed up in military uniforms, jeeps, etc. So it's going to be a good fun day. Up at Bembridge Fort, so...
From 10 till 4.
10 till 4.
We've got the Amateur Radio Club up there, British Legion. We've got lots of reenactments. We get a chance to wander around. There'll be some talks and bits and pieces going on. It's a couple of quid to get in, all proceeds for adults, children free. If you come to it, don't try and drive into the fort, not least of which you'll run David over, but because he'll be on the bridge. Just go past it. You park on the right or left. Most people will be familiar with it. Then... I say 10 to 4, last entry at 3. And it really is just the first chance for us after 6 months to say, look, these are the ideas. This is the way ahead. All the trustees will be there wearing yellow jackets or something. Yeah. We're just talking to people. I say we've got many different attractions. I mean, I'm only going for the hog roast. That's fine. but I'm sure we'll be busy. And yeah, you get a chance to wander around underground, see some bits that have never been seen before. We've got Time and Tide Players are putting on impromptu concerts, and there is a concert at 4:30. All the details are on the website.
Boogie Woogie Bluebirds.
Okay.
It's a sing-along vintage harmony trio, so it's £10 a ticket. So,
and I'll give you a hint, me and Ash are not involved.
That's very disappointing.
No, it's not, trust me.
How many volunteers have you got at the moment?
Well, that's a really good question. So...
about 6 or 7.
Yeah, so the moment, early days. So we've got the main trust, the 6 trustees, and we've given the last 2.5 years thousands of hours just to negotiate. And love them to pieces, but don't ever try and negotiate with the National Trust, okay? So just put that out there. The very large lease. But we're done now. We've got a great relationship with them. Because at the end of the day, it is still their building deep down, the rest of it. But working with them closely... So the team of us, but we're now bringing in experts as needed. So we've got a sort of second wave of probably 8 people, and then we're now bringing volunteers in, both to help us on May the 10th for the open day. I may have mentioned that. Yeah. But also, Ash has now got a team who are now doing a lot of clearance. And
yes, around the sort of ramparts, around the top of the fort, the gorse and brambles was growing at such a rate. So I've got a team of volunteers come up with secateurs and... etc.
Cutting it back. I've just job my school garden.
It was a massive job, yeah. So it just grew like wildfire over the years. So the really nice part about it is we're exposing other parts of the fort and bits that haven't been seen. So it's been lovely.
And again, new gutting placements, new defences that have not been seen for 100 years. So we're documenting those. And again, if anybody's interested in volunteer helping us, just drop us a line, info@bembridgefort.org. Again, there's been so much going on, and of course the winter months up there are a bit bleak, so we've got frostbite
and
places.
Place. It gets a bit windy up there.
It's just getting nice. So we'll be open for the summer season, as I say in the movies. So we are only going to be open this year because we've also got works going on. We had to do a huge amount of work. We've put in 27 new fire doors. We've put in all the signs, fire extinguishers, emergency signs, just so we can open it as a small theatre. New electrics, my word, yeah.
Wow.
Literally, I was up there yesterday because we've just had... this is how exciting it is, having all the sewers and drains pressure washed out. Okay. Oh, that's a way to spend a morning for breakfast. It's got to be done. And... make sure they're working, and the electrics, which some of it dates back to 1940, massive electrical system put in for the radar systems. But I think now what we're doing is we now got events for this season. We're now planning a big season for 2026 with some outside friends who are bringing a whole group of new people in. Big events, probably bigger than I want to get involved in organizing it, but our forte is We're going to turn round this year. We've got 8 very large, we call them offices, but they're big communal spaces which will be put back as they would have been 100 years ago. We've got the only surviving chain home low radar operations room. You'll have seen it from the 1940s film, which we hope to bring back as an education room. We've got the only identification friend or foe radar system building surviving in the world, and indeed the only radar mast of that type. So we have a lot of positives going for us.
And to think the Germans thought it was just holding Dad's army. That's what their view wasn't it? Is that true?
That's a really good point. You have to remember that in 1940, what I love about the fort is that you know, Dunkirk, May 1940, Operation Dynamo, that was considered to be, we're British, we spin that as a victory. Biggest defeat we've ever had. We leave everything behind. Thousands of tons of ammo, 2,600 field guns are left in Northern Europe. The British Army, those that came back, didn't even have the boots. They go at Salisbury. So the whole of the defence of the island, right way round from Freshwater to Cowes, is the local defence volunteer, but you know them as the Home Guard. Now, we all love Captain Mainwaring and Dad's Army and Pike and the rest of them, but you have to remember that in 3 months, 1.45 million men volunteered in early 1940 to become Home Guard. Imagine, would it happen today? And I've interviewed a few of them, sadly left, and, you know, in September 1940, it was a matter of when we're going to be invaded, and I've met lads who were then 16, 17. You know, when they issued Operation Cromwell and the church bell started ringing, he literally took a Lee Enfield rifle, 10 rounds, 17 years old. He kissed his mum and his sister goodbye and he went and dug a hole and sat at Sandown Beach with his mates to wait for the world's most powerful advanced army who had just rolled over him. Yeah. And yet still he went. Wow. Now, I think if nothing else, that story and those stories, yeah. And you know, we now know Churchill was going to flood Sandown beaches with poison gas and float with petrol and light it. We have minefields. We have flame fugasses. Yeah, the Isle of Wight was going to be ground zero, a massive battleground. Yeah. So we're going to tell that story, last thing. But I think it's also a tribute to that generation as we come to VE Day on May the 8th and VJ Day. My grandfather fought in Burma. And, yeah, as we come to what is really the birth of the modern world, you know, as peace falls across, well, peace of a type falls across Europe, although we go into the Cold War, which Ash and I already talked about a minute ago, weren't we, the Cold War?
Yeah, Bembridge Forts does have a connection with the Cold War. So up until 1957, the whole area was still had guns up there and radar, etc. So we want to incorporate a bit of the Cold War into the history of the fort, even though, again, it didn't play a direct part. There was still things, there were parts of it up there at the time. So it's a massive history, like Tim said. It's right from the Palmerston Victorian age, World War One, World War Two, and a bit of the Cold War. So the history is massive. And also Micronair, which were the crop spraying company, and they're still up there today, that make atomizers against locusts in sort of other, you know, in fields in foreign countries where they suffer from locusts eating their crops. So they played a massive role. So the fort story does really need to be told. Yeah. But it's something that me and Tim are trying to do, where we're reaching out to people, and it's something, we've written a book. It's about 40 pages long. We're going to put out a volume two, which is more extensive.
It's got to say, from what you just discussed, 40 pages, I was expecting 400 pages. Yeah.
That's the first day.
Yeah, that's the first book. So the next book is going to give a bit more detail about the human aspect, where I've talked to some of the relatives of grandfathers or fathers that served up there, and even some of the women were up at the fort. So this is a really important an area where the Wrens and the WAFs and the ATS, all women up there on listening headphones. So the WAFs,
I'm running the radar as well. Yeah,
manning the radar. Yeah. The women are up there on the radar, and one of the chain home low radar in the early days, up to I think it was 1942, it had to be turned by hand by a bicycle mechanism, where these women and men were turning this radar around, so it's actually twisted around before 1942, and it became motorised. So the Wrens, the women were up there, they were listening through these called brag loops or anti-submarine loops, where they were listening for any enemy German U-boat traffic that might have sneaked through to
or
try
an
and
invasion
get,
force
to get into Portsmouth Harbour. So Portsmouth Harbour would have been the target, and obviously we didn't want them sort of coming through to attack our capital ships. So these ladies were up there, and the ATS ladies as well. So women at war, they played a massive part in Bembridge Fort. And this is something we also want to sort of celebrate and talk about. Almost unsung heroes of the time. You know, people talk about World War II and they see, you know, soldiers in North Africa or Italy or France. And there's almost a forgotten side of the of World War II, where, you know, men and women were at these forts listening, you know, on these listening posts for hours on end, listening out for submarines and watching the skies any enemy aircraft.
So if people have got stories or think that family members may have been involved at Bembridge Fort, it's worth getting in touch with you to tell their stories.
That'd
then,
be
you,
great.
Is it? Yeah.
And of course, we still have a link. I was speaking to just before we came, I speak to Martin that we still have a link with Modern Communications. And in fact, I don't think we really appreciated the scale. But if you drive past the Mould Hill on the hill, you'll notice it's covered in aerials. Well, all those aerials are still operational. So we're really proud to host or look after or be the landlord for, I don't know what the word is. So we have the Royal National Lifeboat Institute. We have their emergency radio systems up there. We also have Associated British Ports, who we're now working with very closely. So we handle all the identification for the ships in the Solent, all from Bembridge Fort. We have VHF and HF comms, and indeed, we're probably going to have an amateur radio repeater up there, which is serving the community. In fact, there's even a rumour we might have DAB radio up there very soon, which means that Martin and Jay's voice will be coming from our floor, which would be kind of cool. So, and I think that communications link is lovely. It still goes. It shows we are still part of the community instead of, you know, saving ships at sea, if that's the right word. But we also have, right back at the other side of the fort, it's currently a bit buried, we have an original telegraph semaphore mound system for the original communications link. So before radio, before telephone, before telegraph, we still have a mast there which would have a semaphore. Now, that would be, imagine the train signals. Imagine train signals? So Bembridge Fort was the end of the line in 1863. With that mast, you could, by moving the vanes, you could send the letter A, C in Morse. Okay. That went down to what is now the Wild Heart Trust. Then it went up to Ashy. Then it went across to Camp Hill, then to Ryde, then across the Solent. So we could send a message from Bembridge Fort by semaphore all the way up the A3 to the Admiralty in London, going through, I think, 67 stations in 22 minutes and get a reply back within the hour.
That's
early comms. We still have the mast there. Of course, there was a slight problem. It doesn't work at night or if it's foggy, as we know from some of the ships here. But that link is still there. So that communications link through Marconi. You've got to remember the Culver Cliff also had one of the very first Marconi stations in 1903, opposite the Coastal Cottage. And that part of what we're not doing is just the fort. We're looking at all the history of that area. We're just talking about the big shooting range. We have Redcliffe Fort. Culver Battery Barracks, Culver Battery right on the end, was the very last Palmerston Battery built in 1906. Wow. Victoria had been dead for 5 years. Palmerston had been dead for 50 years. We're still building Palmerston Forts. So we have, was Bembridge Fort one of the first, and Culver Battery. But in the middle was this super secret radio station, which controlled D-Day. Welcome to our program.
Wow, okay. Wow, guys, it's some story. I can listen to you for hours, but we've got to take a break very shortly. But thank you for coming in. That's some epic story. And definitely May the 10th, isn't it? That's your big open day, so people want to find out more.
10 o'clock in the morning. Please stand your entry.
10 till 4, yes.
10 till 4. And I say hog roast starts at 11:15, which is why I'm there.
And you've also got a website as well.
The website, so bembridgefort.org is the one to go onto. We put a regular blog out there, all the booking now. And one thing I must say just before we run away is, so Bembridge Fort is still a private fort. We have, during the week, we have the engineering company, Micron, working there. And there is no access unless you are by a pre-booked or tour or the open day. That's really important because there's some very big drops. We've got contractors on site. We've got a lot of vehicle movements. Some of the delivery vehicles are a little rapid. We are sorting that out.
Okay.
It's a working factory. It is secure and private. But we will be putting on an increasing number of tours. Open day is great one to come in and have a look at what we're doing. And then the other thing is, of course, come to the shows. The show we've just got a fairly an old friend of mine. So in August, 1st of August, we've got Paul Carenza coming down. Now, Paul Carenza is currently hosting BBC Two. Okay. He does Thought for the Day. He's standing in. He's a DJ on BBC Surrey. But he's also the main staff writer for Miranda and Not Going Out.
Yeah.
Paul is a great mate of mine. We've been working together for years. A radio historian nut, and he's doing a series of one-man shows there. There'll be a lot of comedy thrown in because he is quite funny. It's his day job. Jimmy You think Lee Mack and Jimmy Carr are funny. It's really Paul. Okay. I can let that out, Paul, honest. So, yeah, he's a staff writer. So Paul's doing three nights for us now.
Wow, OK.
At the Fort. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's not...
I think that's in August, Tim, isn't it?
It's in August, beginning of August, yeah. We've only literally just put that up, but... £10 a ticket, £18 for two nights. I'm not sure if you want to do all three. I've got to do all three.
Okay. But,
so, again, we are looking to go... we're looking to, like, the rest of it. And we were just talking about writers. And if you have an idea you think that you could bring to the Fort to host, for us to host, you think would be serving the community, make the Isle of Wight a better place, let us know. You know, and we're not doing paintball.
We're open to ideas, aren't we?
Yeah, we're not doing paint. We're not doing paintballing in the ditch, but that's the only one we said no to so far.
Okay. Well, that sounds super exciting. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, we'll get you in again, guys, because I just love hearing the stories and stuff like that. So even when you've got more to promote, you're more than welcome to come back in. But we really have got to take a ad break now, and then we'll be back after that. Cheers. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.